Wait, you want to walk the carpet?
Honey, it's a movie premiere, is it not?
Yeah, and I assume the mayor is walking the carpet as well, yes?
Yes, if he has to. Okay, I will schedule your arrival time when I get home.
I would like to request a time before Roland.
And I'd like to go first.
Okay.
All right, I'm going to get back and put my skinny jeans into the dryer. I think they're really going to pop on your 20-foot Merlot.
I think so, too. They're going to pop on that carpet.
Greetings, it's the Duke here.
And I'm Lady J, and this is Up Schitt's Creek, the podcast.
Dedicated to all things Schitt's Creek.
How are you, the Duke?
I'm great.
Yay.
I actually cannot stop laughing.
Dude.
I don't even know where we're going to begin with this because it's all good.
I am probably the most obsessed with this episode.
Yeah.
Maybe of all time.
Understatement of the century.
Oh my God.
Yes. One of the best.
Yeah, for sure.
Claiming it. I haven't laughed this hard in one of these episodes in a really long time.
It genuinely made me laugh out loud.
Yeah,
it did. I've started doing this pattern this season where I watch the show on my balcony, even in the freezing cold. So I'll be like outside on the street cackling at the top of my lungs, listening in my headphones. And so people must think I'm an insane person.
Well,
laughing.
Aren't you?
I mean, yeah, they are correct in assuming so.
Yeah, my family just gets annoyed because, you know, I'm just sitting there like, ha, 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 life is going on around me. And I'm just like, blah, cracking up. But no, this is a good one.
Yeah.
We're going to have a lot of fun talking about
my goodness.
This one.
Mm-hmm. Oof. Let's just dive right into it.
Let's.
This is episode 605, titled The Premiere. Yeah. And the Pop TV synopsis is Alexis plans a Crows movie premiere. Patrick has his wisdom teeth removed.
Okay.
Yeah. Let's begin this episode as we begin every episode this season.
With our first segment. Oh, word.
Come on, baby, tell me what's the word.
You know the deal. We give you our words for this episode, and we encourage you all to send us your words for each and every episode as well.
Why don't you start us off?
I shall. So for this particular episode, I was kind of following David's lead on this.
Okay.
And when he's so sweetly putting Patrick to bed,
yeah,
he mentions Patrick having a complete 180, or doing a complete 180.
Mm-hmm.
And that kind of... I don't know. I piggybacked off of that. And so the very first thing that came to mind was about face.
Ah.
Yes. And for that situation, but also with every other storyline here, because Moira ends up doing an about face.
Yes.
With this whole premiere business. And Stevie ends up doing an about face with her whole situation. So that kind of was what I settled on.
You're so good. You are really good at that O
well,
word.
Thanks.
I love that.
Thanks.
I took maybe more of like a simplistic approach to it, but I'm pretty confident about it. My word is hopes.
Okay.
Like almost like hopes and dreams, but it's one word, so it's hopes.
I like the look you just gave me to like, you feel
know
me?
What I mean?
You feel me?
Not like hope in the sense of like hope dies last, but hopes in the sense of like dreams. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And which I guess is the same thing, but you know, because I feel like a lot of this episode is dealing with ideas of people's hopes for things,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Yeah.
And whether or not those hopes got dashed or get dashed.
Okay.
Or sort of, you know, are maybe validated or affirmed, you know. I think mainly, right, I'm talking about Patrick with his hopes for, you know, his future that have clearly changed since he
right,
met David.
Right,
Moira's hopes for what this premiere would have been or should have been or could have been and ended up being.
Yeah.
And then Stevie's hopes, right, for her future, for her plan of getting out of this town and whether or not that's ever going to happen and sort of deciding maybe that it doesn't need to. So that's which I think is similar, right? Like to your idea too. Like,
yeah,
it does. There is a lot of change in hopes happening here.
Absolutely.
You know?
Absolutely. We see a lot of that.
Yeah.
It seems, you know, I don't know how you feel about it, but ever since this season started, there seems to be a theme in each and every episode.
Hmm.
And like, I don't know if it's just me, but I'm kind of seeing it. And that's what I think is making the word easier to choose.
I was going to say maybe it's the other way around. Maybe because we're thinking about the episodes thematically, we're seeing a theme. Not that there isn't one, clearly, but that we're sort of more inclined to find it because we're thinking about the word.
Well, that just makes sense.
Right?
Yeah.
But yeah, this fucking episode.
Yeah, this fucking episode.
I feel like, and I know I've said this like twice already, but I feel like finally, the season has found its footing.
Yeah.
Like this does feel like, okay, we're in a launching point now. We're setting up the rest of the season. It's a trajectory. It's all, you know, what is it? Guns ahead or whatever. That's not the phrase.
I don't know what the phrase is. I know what you mean,
this
and it's there.
This podcast is just a series of me trying to think of phrases and failing to.
Have you met me? I'm the same way. The same way.
Oh, man.
I think it rubbed off a little bit too much on you.
Yeah. Well, oh, no, I was going to say the other way around.
Yeah. No, but you're right. I mean, there's times in this season where I just want to like reach through the television and give each one of these characters a hug and be like, dude, you're fucking amazing.
I know.
They're not characters, but actors.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you're fucking amazing.
Mm-hmm.
What the fuck are they doing this season?
Yeah.
I'm like very impressed.
Yeah.
Very, very impressed.
I know.
And I think when you and I text each other, you know, throughout the episode while we're watching it, like, we're sharing that same sentiment. Like, what the fuck
I know.
Is this? What scene did I just watch here?
There's so many times, and especially because watching it on Pop as it's airing with commercials and the act breaks and stuff is a little bit odd for me.
Yeah.
Because, and it's especially odd because the act breaks that Pop puts in, where they cut to commercial, is not a typical cable network TV version of that. Like, they only have like two commercial breaks in each episode, and the first one comes like well into the halfway point.
Yeah.
And so it kind of like takes the rhythm out of it a little bit for me. But having you to text when that happens keeps the rhythm going because it allows me to
That's very true.
It allows me to like keep the momentum of like, what did we just watch? What's happening?
Right.
Oh my God, this is amazing until the commercials end and we are back
into it. You mean the 50 million commercials?
Dude,
That's so unnecessary.
I do not understand the methodology. It's like, give me shorter commercial breaks if you need to give me more of them. Like,
yeah. Even when I'm fast forwarding, like usually you know how many you're going to. No. There's literally like 10.
God damn it.
It's like, what the fuck?
Okay. Get it together, Pop.
Mucinex. Like, I don't give a shit.
Even if you are Jason Manzoukas' voice.
Really? Like, if I need to see Sheila Sheshed one more fucking time, dude.
What the fuck?
Oh,
is that
God.
What she's saying? Sheila Sheshed?
I don't know
her
what
name
the fuck
is Sheila.
I think it's Sheila or something.
I don't
Somebody's
know. Whatever.
With a shisha she shed.
I love that all the listeners also know what we're talking about because we're all watching the same thing.
Unless you're watching it on CBC.
Yeah, that's true.
Then it's a different.
Or on Amazon,
sure.
I guess. Maybe you don't get the commercials if you bought the pass.
True.
Which
Hulu.
Smart few.
Yeah. So I enjoy having you to text.
That's right.
Get you a friend.
That was my point. That's
who
right.
you can text during commercial breaks.
That's right. Because it really helps keep the momentum going.
It does. It does.
So, Patrick and David.
Yes. Patrick is apparently going to have wisdom teeth removed.
Yeah. What a time to have a surgery that could go horribly wrong.
Sure. Yeah, it could.
Like, I've heard horror stories where they fuck it up and then you end up having like an abscess and multiple surgeries later. They're still trying to fix your mouth. That's risky right before a wedding.
It's also just really funny how they like plopped this.
That's true too.
Right here.
It's
and
like
they,
random.
And they also made it so like Patrick's car just like is not functioning at the moment. So Stevie has to come and drive them. It's just, you know,
David acts as if there's like been a runner for six seasons about Patrick's funky car. We've never once, with the exception of episode one where it won't start. So like, okay, but one incident does not a pattern make.
I know, honestly. And even David's like, oh, it's a garbage car kind of a thing. Like,
it needs to be set on fire. It's a perfectly fine Prius looking thing.
I don't know what it is. It looked like a little Corolla.
Maybe it's a Corolla.
Whatever. I mean, listen, I don't hate that they've just plopped this in our laps, but because it's fun and it's funny and it makes for a great little storyline.
Yes.
But so here we are. Stevie is driving them to the dentist.
Yes. And they're making small talk, as you do. Mm-hmm. Well, actually, Stevie's complaining about having to drive them to the dentist.
What? Stevie's complaining about something?
Oh, my God. A knowable universe this is.
I would not have expected that. But move on. God. Look.
I know. There's so many. Like, the entire impetus for this entire storyline is set up on, is based on so many suspension of disbelief little things that we have to just allow for as the audience to get us to the point that we need to get to with the storyline.
Yeah. So in two storylines, she is impacting the situation. You know, she immediately starts to talk about how she's supposed to meet Mr. Rose back at her apartment.
Later today.
Uh-huh. And she explains to them, she thinks he's going to ask her to come back.
Yeah.
And
which she seems kind of stoked on.
She knows, and she kind of implies that she may have jumped the gun a little bit as far as, you know, leaving the motel and going and trying to do her own thing because she's not finding anything so far, which how hard has she tried?
I don't know.
She went to Larry Ayer.
And she says that she turned down another job interview that day or this week.
It makes for a good story. It's working. But, like, the whole suspension of disbelief thing. What?
My thing with the Stevie in this episode is I feel like she's redeemed herself.
Yes.
Not to say that she needed to redeem herself, but, like, the character has found redemption in my heart because I was like so quick to like just ready to just hate on her and like was like, what the fuck are you doing this whole time? And
I mean, they didn't start it off very well.
Well, that's
because I thought this was going to be another episode where we had to hear like her trials and tribulations and her finding herself again. I'm like, please don't do this.
Yeah, I know. This time. But I will say like her admitting out loud to her friends that she kind of has been aimless and like floating around for the last however long it's been. It made me feel like, okay, so she's not a complete idiot. She sees herself. She sees her patterns. She knows that she's been fucking up, and like now she's looking, and now that it's looking like she has a chance to come back in, she seems like that's what she wants to do. And so I'm like, okay, cool, you're realizing your mistakes and you're coming to a point where you're gonna get back on track.
Yes.
And you can admit that problem and get rent, you know. So like I'm like, okay, I'm with you again, Stevie, because I was like so not on her side for a while, and it just, like, I'm there again with her.
Right. And like I said, it wasn't starting off very well. I was kind of like, oh, throwing my hands up kind of thing. Like, oh, Jesus. Here we go again. Mm-hmm. But I'm so glad when they got in, you know, to the whole her and Johnny situation. They took us down in a different direction. And I was very grateful for that. Anyways, she's here.
She's here. She's taking them to the thing.
Driving to France.
And we sort of don't even really deal with that too much because, like, the next cut to in David and Patrick's story is them coming home from the dentist.
Yes.
Which gives us one of the best scenes.
Absolutely.
That's ever happened on the show.
That was a fun car ride.
Yes, it was very fun. Thank you so much for all the hot tips you were giving our Uber driver. For a second, I was concerned about my rating, but I think he seemed to enjoy all the wrong directions you were yelling at him.
David, I'm hungry. I'm a hungry, hungry hippo.
We're not supposed to feed you right now.
Can you make me a lasagna, David?
Imagine? No, I think we rest this little voice because you have been chatting ever since the dentist's office.
Why are you so handsome?
I mean, unless you want to keep talking, in which case that works as well.
Look at your skin. It's like perfect.
It's a 9-step regimen I do twice a day. It's not a big deal.
It's so good.
I don't know who's funnier.
They both are.
They really are.
They both are so good in this scene. It's like the timing and like the ba-ba-ba of the comp of the back and forth.
It's amazing.
So good.
I could hear Patrick sing Hungry Hungry Hippo all day.
Also, I need to know, because when, like, in the commercials for that game,
yeah,
was that the song? Is that how they sung it?
I think it might be close to that, but I don't think that's exactly what it was.
Not in America, anyway.
I just think he was, like, freestyling.
Yeah, yeah. He was just riffing. He was riffing on the melody.
In his drug-induced haze. Oh, my God. Like,
and David is reacting to everything very, like as you would to somebody who's not drugged up. You know what I mean? Like, he's just talking to Patrick like he's having a normal conversation, but Patrick is so out of it.
Uh-huh.
Oh, my God. It's amazing.
It is. I love the Uber comments, too. Screaming wrong directions to his Uber driver. But Dave is not concerned about the rating. That's basically about to go way down because of Patrick. But no, it's great. It's great. So he puts him to bed, or tries to.
Oh, man. And then you get the bombshell of bombshells.
You know what I really want to do with you?
Uh-huh. Ethically speaking, I don't think we can do that with you in this state.
Have a baby.
Okay. We will make a baby as soon as you sober up.
Oh, no, not make a baby. Have a baby. I want to have, like, a little baby with you. And we could just love it and hold it and bounce it.
That's it. That's a big 180.
You would be such a good dad.
Have we met?
I wish you were my dad.
Okay, now we're just spiraling off in all directions.
Shh, listen, okay? Come here. I got a secret.
David,
I'm very hungry.
Okay, there's nothing I can do about that.
We just lie down.
Okay.
I want to hold you. Imagine us right now, but just with a little...
But, like, imagine. Yeah. It's not hard to imagine.
Yeah, but can I, though? Fuck.
Look, have crazier things happened in this world?
No.
Yes.
I mean, yeah. That's what I meant.
No.
I'm sorry.
Oh, okay.
My brain was just focused on, like,
not
the next
the point
thing
I was making.
Just, you're right. Like, it's not completely out of the realm of reality.
People that we would never expect to have, or people that we always think should not have children, have them all the time.
And end up being amazing parents.
Exactly. So, I mean, it takes a lot of love, which these two clearly have for one another.
True.
And, you know, also, David has kind of... brought down that wall for other things.
True.
So I don't know.
I just, it's the same thought that I have about myself with a baby, which is like, I know that I have a pretty, you know, big capacity for love, and that I have love in my heart, and that if you put a baby in front of me, like, I'll love it. Especially if it's mine, I guess. But
well, now,
right. Super. But the thought of the whole, like, now I have a baby that I'm responsible for is my barrier to entry. Like, my barrier to entry is not my incapacity to love something and care for it and raise it. It's the idea that, like, this thing is mine now. Like, you know, like now I have to deal with this baby. Like, I feel like that's where David's disdain for children comes from, too. Cause, like, he's not, you know, he doesn't handle messy situations well.
But also what I appreciate about David in this scene, well, in this storyline just in general, is that he is not pretending to be anything that he's not.
Right.
And just like in the first scene when they're driving to the dentist's office, he, you know, when Patrick says, I'd always imagine myself having a wife and a kid at this point. Right. And David's like, well, one or two ain't bad, kind of a thing. David knows. He owns it. He's like, basically, I am a child.
Sure.
So the fact that he is very aware, he's very self-aware, that says a lot. And I think that probably is one of the biggest gifts he could give to Patrick, is not fooling him and
Absolutely.
Not kidding him.
Absolutely.
Like, look, I am not going to be great, and we need to, like, take a beat here, because this
Squash
is not
that.
Something we need to be doing right now.
Mm-mm.
And if they don't, they're going to be fine. If they do, they're going to be fine. Regardless, yeah. It's just right now with everything happening, I don't know.
You know what? I can see David in 10 years.
Yeah.
You know, well into his marriage with Patrick, settled, comfortable at a certain level of ease in life, then start to like think about and realize even maybe that he is perfectly equipped to have a kid and to deal with a baby. But I feel like, to your point, like he is just on the other side of immature right now still.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, yeah.
Not fully mentally and functionally ready and prepared to think about having a baby.
Which, in all fairness, I mean, he may never be.
Yeah, he may never be.
That's okay. But that has to be something they both agree that they're okay with.
Do you believe Patrick when he says that he's fine?
I didn't at first. But when David asked him, are you sure this isn't something that you're like,
you say now you're fine, right? But you're not really.
So I'm glad that he asked him that question, because once Dave or Patrick was like, no, I'm fine, I believed it. But I don't know. I don't know if I believe Patrick, but what if David's the one who's like, you know what? Maybe this is, I love him enough that this is something I would kind of play with the idea of having this happen.
Well, so I think while Patrick, I believe Patrick would be fine with that.
Right. But while I believe Patrick, I think David might be the one to kind of go back on that.
Okay. Yeah. Which I think, right, that's sort of what this is setting up.
Yeah.
Right?
I think so.
I mean, the whole, like, anytime a character on TV says, like, absolutely not, never, it's like the Chekhov's gun rule. You know what I mean? It's like, and mind you, I don't even necessarily think that we will, or I don't know that I want to see that eventuality play out in the series. It's enough for me to envision a future down the line for these two.
Yeah, and that
might change.
And that probably is what they're setting up here.
Yeah.
Is just the future, giving us a picture of what is in store for them in the future. The fact that they can make this kind of a decision, or they can even entertain this kind of a decision. That's setting something up that's so much bigger that doesn't need to be shown. It's just, oh my God, look at them building a life together.
Yeah.
And that's what's so cool about this is that it's just setting us up for something that's not going to be on camera or on the show, which is like, wow, they're really building something here.
Right. Right.
You know, which is kind of lovely.
It's nice in that way that's not heavy handed.
Yeah.
You know, that like,
exactly.
Especially shows that are ending tend to do, right, is like just like give you all the things you ever thought you wanted about the characters and stuff. And you know, I feel like the show is doing a good job of like, this also just feels like another season of the show, and they're dealing with like big, huge, momentous things in their lives. Like, it's cool.
I think going into this season, I expected something a little heavier. I expected to be like, oh my God. You know what I mean? For them to be finalizing things so
like every
much.
Every episode is like,
Right. But to your point, everything just seems to be flowing very organically. They're not harping on certain things. They're not breaking our hearts left and right. And you know what I mean?
Right.
Like, I'm not in fucking tears. Well, I'm in tears a lot of the time, but I'm not like.
But for other reasons.
Right, for other reasons. So it's just, I appreciate the way this season is kind of just developing. I like it.
Yeah. So, yeah. So that's kind of, they leave it at Patrick is cool. He knows what he's signed up for, you know, and he loves his life with Patrick. I mean, with David. And
they're going to pop some pills right now.
You're going to pop some pills, man.
Wow.
Wow.
In preparation for Moira's premiere.
Yeah.
And boy, do they. But let's fucking get to that later.
Yeah, we'll cross the premiere bridge when we get to it.
If I have to talk about that shit now, dude, I'm going to lose it.
No, we don't have to talk about it just yet. But I guess let's get ourselves there. So
let's.
The episode opens with Alexis in like PR mode. You know, she's sat Moira down. She's got a flip chart and she's like giving a little speech about the ideation of her ideas. And so she's come up with this idea to have a premiere for the Crows movie here in town. They can invite a couple news outlets, like make it a thing and get some publicity. And then, like, you know, she'll have her chance at a red carpet. Like, it'll be cool, you know? But Moira immediately, like, is just not having it.
So I thought because they're not throwing a premiere, we could plan a premiere screening here in town. Could be like a cute press angle.
Oh, sure. For a scrappy little novice, but not for someone who's cut many a crimson rug. What's next? I sign my name in the pavement outside Bob's garage.
Jocelyn gives you an honorary degree at her school.
Host the Met Gala at David's store.
I don't like that one.
I cannot stop the masses from gathering to view the film, but best to avoid any fulsome indecorum until we're assured a positive reaction.
Remember that Waterworld 2 premiere?
Exactly, David. Oh, the last place anyone wanted to be when those reviews came in was a glass-bottomed pirate ship in the middle of the ocean.
Good luck, though.
Lick rust. Thank you.
So now we've had David tell Alexis to eat glass.
Yes.
And now Alexis has told David to lick rust.
Amazing. Amazing. Oh my God. I didn't think you could top eat glass.
I didn't either.
Lick rust definitely tops eat glass. It's amazing.
I want to tell somebody that.
So good.
I just want to be somewhere and somebody upset me and be like, lick rust. And they'll be like, what the fuck did she just tell me to do?
Right.
God.
It's so good. Yeah. Because it's like, wait, what? Like, it just, it catches you off guard.
Which is exactly my reaction when she said it. I was like, what did she just tell him? Yeah, it's great.
Oh, man. Also, Waterworld 2 premiere being on a glass bottom ship in the middle of the ocean is fucking genius, too. that's very, very good.
You know, in this scene, I felt like David was so perfectly placed in this scene to be every reaction. All of his facial expressions, everything that he does, I feel like is what's going on in Moira's head. As she speaks, what he's doing, his actions are what's happening in her head. It is so perfect that he was there.
Yeah.
Ugh.
These guys really fucking nail the cold open and the button. I could just watch all the cold opens and all the buttons of all the episodes and be like, totally satisfied.
There's an idea for us. Something that we could do.
Yeah. But yeah, no, very good cold open. Moira's basically like, this is stupid. Having a rinky-dink premiere like this is shameful almost, you know? Like, it's not even that it's shameful, but I feel like she thinks that it's beneath her to have a small little to-do like this, you know, that she's that she herself is putting on.
Which is interesting to me, though, because this whole thing started with, you know, this was supposed to be a film. There was supposed to be a premiere. There was supposed to be all this stuff. And then it's a straight to Interflix kind of a situation. So I don't know. I expected, I guess, for Moira to be more open to having fun.
And fanfare.
Right.
Yeah.
It was a little bit surprising to me that she's just immediately like, scoffs at the idea of, you know, having a premiere in this town that she lives in.
I know what you mean, which is why I think that she is good with the idea of there just being a viewing party. She does agree to the idea that, like, okay, we'll all gather in the town hall and we'll put the projector and we'll watch it together. And, you know, because she does want a little bit of fanfare and like adoration from people, you know. But I think that the idea that like they're going to get press involved and like come and like a podunk version of a premiere party or, you know, red carpet event makes her get a little bit like embarrassed and like want to put her head in the sand, you know?
Which upsets me a little bit because as funny as this scene is with both Moira and David going back and forth about like, oh, what are we going to do? You know, that kind of a situation. It's also a slap in the face to Alexis for everything that she has done and is doing for her.
I completely agree.
And I see the frustration in Alexis and I feel it for her too. It's like, ugh. You're welcome.
Yeah.
For doing all this shit for you. Yeah. And moving forward in this storyline, it just, the frustration and anger, whatever she's feeling, she turns into like
boss bitch.
Ass bitch.
Yeah.
It is fucking badass.
Yeah.
Fuck. I want to stand up and just like fucking applaud her like the entire time.
I was like, goddamn, you go, girl.
Fuck
like, amazing.
Yep.
Because what ends up happening, right, is like Moira's just going about her life. She goes to the cafe to pick up lunch and Jocelyn's there. She's very cute. She's like, oh, hello, Access Hollywood.
Which Jocelyn looks amazing sitting there at the cafe. She? Yes.
There's something about her I was like, right, look at you.
Very, very like glowy. Mm-hmm. And yeah, she mm-hmm. looks amazing.
Even Twyla looks glowy.
Yeah.
It must have been something with the lighting that day or something.
I don't know, but whatever it was working.
They both looked awesome.
Phenomenal.
And so Jocelyn's like, there's going to be the viewing party, you know,
sure.
And how she's invited one of her friends from the Elmdale Chronicle.
Yeah.
And Moira's like, oh, why? Like, this is just a little viewing party. And she's like, well, there's already like so many rave reviews. And like, we thought, like, why wouldn't you want that, you know? And so she shows her the Ornithology Today review.
Well, if anybody knows about crows, it's them.
The crows have eyes three is good fun. Well, that's hyperbolic. I mean, they already had fun. Now they've added good.
Keep reading.
The film showcases the emotional depth and intellectual capacity of our oft-maligned friend, the crow. We were resolute about not making an issues movie, but I'm glad they picked up on that.
It mentions you, Moira.
Here it is, Moira Rose, as Dr. Clara Mandrake, is delightfully unhinged. You know what they call this, gals? An understated rave.
Oh, it's too bad you won't be there tonight. It would have been nice to cheer you on. Yeah, and my plus one, Janet from the Elmdale Chronicle, would have really loved a quote.
Well, you might want to tell your friend Janet that there just may be a bombshell attendee after all.
Yay! A premiere! Oh, I don't know if I have anything fancy enough to wear.
Oh, my default is always formal, but I'm sure no one will bat a side eye at black tie casual.
She gets excited.
She does. She gets excited because other people are excited. And now there's a review.
Yeah. That turns the tide for her.
Yeah.
I think this whole Interflix thing, and we touched on this in the last episode with the whole watching of the trailer over and over again and yeah. like needing affirmation from people, right? Like, I think that she's sort of hedging her bets. She's trying not to like make this out to be her comeback moment of her career necessarily. Mm-hmm. You know, she knows it's good. She knows that people are going to be watching it. People are going to be talking about it and stuff. But like, she's not trying to like position this as like, look at me, I'm back.
Right.
You know? Until that review happens and she gets name dropped and she's like, oh shit. Okay. I see. I should get on this train then.
Does any part of you think that maybe Jocelyn wrote this review or that she has something to do with this?
No, I had not thought of that.
I did immediately. Because one, she was so quick to show this to her and like to get her hyped up and like keep reading kind of a thing.
Well, okay, but we have to remember that it was because the Crow's account posted that article that they all saw it. Remember Twyla says like, oh yeah, they posted it on that account you made us all follow.
Right. I don't know. I just, clicked. We're like, I wonder if Jocelyn has something to do with this.
I do like that idea.
Especially after the last episode where she like read her that thing that she wrote. I don't know. And then now all of a sudden Jocelyn has a friend that, you know.
True.
So I don't know.
All of a sudden she got journalist friends.
Yeah. So I don't know. I feel like something's happening here.
I'm really liking what you're putting down. I think that's a good thing to keep our eye on.
Or maybe I just really want Moira and Jocelyn to work together. Maybe that's what it is. I don't know. But
you know what? I would love to see Jocelyn become a journalist.
Me too. I think she has it.
Right?
I definitely think she has it. Yeah.
Oh my God, I'm liking this
idea. I don't know. Everything just seems to be falling into place.
Yeah, shocking. So,
yeah, really. I mean, now Moira's hyped.
She comes like running into the hotel room.
She can't eat anymore. No. I love how she left the food there.
I won't be eating today. And she's like beeline to her closet.
Yeah.
And that's when Alexis comes in. I just got a call from the Chronicle. They want to come. And Moira's like, oh yeah, we're going to need to keep a seat open for them. And she's like, you told me this wasn't going to be a premiere. I only have 4 hours now.
Yeah. So she is left to deal with this. Okay, now I got to put this whole thing back together when I already was trying to.
Yeah.
From the beginning.
But she fucking comes through.
She does. And we get reintroduced to the dress.
Yes.
She did not get rid of the dress.
She did not.
Oh, did you, like, yell? I like, not scream, but I let out some type of a noise.
When you saw it. A surprise
cry when I saw the dress.
Well, here's the thing is, unfortunately, because we live in the age of social media, all of the Instagram press for this episode like showed her wearing it.
Yeah.
So I knew it was going to appear. I guess it was a nice reveal that, like, oh, she never actually returned it.
Yeah.
But there was a piece, there was a part of that reveal that we'll talk about in a second that did blow my mind. Like, anyway, we'll talk about it. But,
okay.
But, like, knowing that she was going to wear the dress was not, like, I was like, well, I knew that already because from all the promos, you know?
Sure.
But anyway, so Alexis goes to the town hall. We see her, like, putting chairs in place, like, doing the manual labor of all of that, you know? Which, again, growth for Alexis.
Yep.
Like, normally she'd be standing in the corner directing people what to do. And now this is crunch time.
She's,
like,
hands-on.
She's got to handle business. And Ronnie and Roland come in.
So the premiere may be getting, like, a little bit bigger than I had planned.
Oh, snap. It's a premiere now? Because first you said it was, and then you said it was just a viewing party.
Yeah, and if it's a premiere, we're all in trouble because my skinny jeans are in the wash.
No, it is a premiere. Unfortunately, that decision was made like half an hour ago, so it would be really helpful if I could just tell you what I need.
Oh, no. The red carpet that you told me not to order.
Yes, but at this point, I will settle for any shade of red, and it doesn't have to be 60 feet.
Okay, good, because all I've got is a 20-foot Merlot in my garage.
And obviously, you're coming to me for a little star power. I get it. Be good to have a name there tonight.
No, you're the crow hookup. I wanted to create, like, a headline-grabbing moment where I release a bunch of crows just before the movie starts.
What about the liquor license? Because I'm assuming people are going to want to be drinking through this thing.
Okay, we have a situation on our hands that needs to be solved now. We have a 12-time Daytime Emmy Award-attending actress coming to walk the Merlot carpet in hours, and press coming from all over, bringing attention to your town. So either you can help me out, or I pull the plug now and nobody wins.
Okay.
Amazing.
What do you even fucking say to that?
That whole monologue of, like, we have a 12-time Emmy attending nominee, you know, whatever, like, da-da-da-da-da, or nobody wins, is just like, I'm in awe of you.
Yeah, she's like, do you want me to fucking pull the plug or what? Are you going to help
me? Are you going to do this?
Or what
are we all going to fuck up now?
Yeah. Like, holy fuck.
I honestly felt like standing up and clapping for her. Like,
that's what I'm saying. I wanted to scream out loud, like, ovation. Fuck yes, bitch.
Amazing.
Oh, my God.
And Ronnie and Roland are just, like, staring at her agape, like, my mouth's agape, like,
I feel like Ronnie's mouth was agape that entire time. Even especially when Roland was like, I want to go read a walk the carpet, the red carpet also.
She goes,
I want to go before Roland.
She's... Even on that red carpet, dude, she is hamming up those cameras.
Oh, my gosh.
Here's what I will say. The show, in the last couple of seasons especially, has really nailed how to use Ronnie.
Yes. Yep.
Ronnie is one of these characters that, you know, she doesn't need a lot of screen time. She's like a sniper. Like, she comes in, she does the funny bit, and she's out. And she's so good at it.
Yeah.
And they're so good at writing to that. And it's like, she's amazing.
I know.
Oh, snap. It's a premiere now? Like, it's so clean. She's great.
Yeah, she is. I mean, I feel like they're starting to do that with all of the characters.
Yeah.
It's so crazy to watch.
Yeah.
But Alexis knows what she wants. She knows what needs to be done. And she's not.
And she's willing to settle on certain things.
Sure.
She's like, okay, it doesn't have to be red.
Which
it's
is also amazing.
Absolutely.
Even when Roland is like, oh, I'm going to go put my skinny jeans in the dryer. I think they're really going to pop on that Merlot carpet. She's like, yes, they're really going to pop.
And then, and the way that that scene ends is her grabbing her clipboard and being like, okay, yes.
Takes a deep breath. She's like
okay, this is going to be okay. Like, she's like, she's fucking like, this is what she's been training
for,
you know? And she's crushing it.
Yeah, really is.
Yeah, like, it's really gratifying to see her, like, successfully doing all of this shit.
You know, the word proud cannot be used enough times. with a show, period, but...
right.
With Alexis.
Yeah.
So. Oh, my God.
The fucking premiere.
First of all, Stevie is their driver.
Yeah, amazing.
I love that.
Dressed like a fucking limo driver.
Yes.
Because Moira
looks good.
That suit is working.
Yeah. So when we saw the promos for season six, I'm wondering if that's because we all thought it was the whole wedding situation, which, hey, it still might be.
It still could be.
But I'm wondering if that's what where that was getting at. And maybe it's going to be something totally different.
Maybe.
For Stevie. Maybe. Who knows? That's so fun about this. I don't know. But they're at the premiere.
Yes. And so Moira, like, steps out of the car.
Oh, dear.
And this is what I was alluding to earlier. That fucking headdress.
Yeah.
And the fact that she didn't wear a wig.
Yeah.
Speaks volumes.
Yep.
Like, I'm obsessed with this look.
Yeah.
It's, oh my God, it's everything. It's everything. It's so good.
She killed it.
Yeah.
She absolutely killed it.
Yeah.
I love
that
whole headdress thing.
When you like pan up and you see her.
Yes.
You're just like, oh my God, you're like a ray of light.
Absolutely. Like,
she talk so about glowing.
Appropriate.
Oh my God, it's. Like, she's a fucking statue. Like, it's amazing. It's just, I don't have enough words in my vocabulary to explain, like, the amazingness.
Anya and Lucky did amazing with her hair and makeup. I mean, dude, come on.
Dude.
Yeah, she looks great.
I've never seen her natural hair look that great. It's so amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I love when she gets out of this car. Johnny's like, okay, honey, good luck. Go do your thing. I'll be 10 feet behind you. Like, he's used to, every red carpet. Right. But she's like, nope, not tonight.
I want my hand candy by my side.
Stop it.
Dude.
But even he's like, what?
Okay. And then we pan over and Ronnie's like hamming it up on the carpet.
And rolling it.
With his all denim suit and his mayoral like pendant.
He's wearing a leather jacket over denim, first of all. Why?
Amazing.
Secondly, what the fuck? It's like I immediately thought he had just been like knighted or something. Like Sir Roland shit. You know what I mean?
Like as if like, I mean, he walks around town all day as the mayor and he's never like so ceremonious about it. But here on the red carpet, I'm the mayor of
this town. Pretty great. It's pretty fucking great.
Everyone's bringing their A game, you know?
Yeah. And then there's Jocelyn.
Looking amazing.
Yep. In that red dress.
Dude, she looks great.
I know.
And then, of course, like, Alexis is, like, running the whole thing. Like, okay, we got to walk. We got to move. Like, this is, like, it's all, like, timed and, like, ready to go. And she tells Moira that, like, all she has to say is just a few remarks and can give the cue to the crow guy. And then that'll be that.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is my great pleasure to welcome you to a North American screening of the psychological thriller.
Move it along.
The Crows Have Eyes 3, The Croning. Let the croning commence. Now, please, everyone, stay calm. Whatever you do, do not look them in the eye.
You're making them angrier.
I'm not, Alexis. I know a bit of their language, but...
This is fucked.
Dude. The glee in David and Patrick's faces.
Watching. All I could do right now is think about that scene. The look on David's face as he's just like
staring at
looking
the crows
at all
in
the things
sky.
Happening. And meanwhile, Patrick is right next to him, like giggling, like, just like he wants to die of laughter.
Oh my God.
This is great.
It's so clean.
I was, oh my God. The fact that I wasn't like a mess on the floor just rolling around. Oh, wow.
Does Moira legit think she can talk to crows?
Yes.
She's so cuckoo sometimes. I know a bit of their language.
Yes. I really do think that she does.
I feel like every episode's going to have her cawing. Have you realized so far every episode she finds a reason to caw?
As she should. I'm good with it. I'm
cool with that runner. Like, I need to see her cawing in every fucking episode.
You know what
season.
I need to see? I need to see the scene without the crows because how they originally filmed it.
Right.
And before they like... added the crows to it and just watch everybody looking around because every time I rewatch this in the past, I don't know how many hours, I was watching each character, like, looking at these crows in disbelief. And I'm like, wow, how funny that must have been filming it.
Yeah.
They would be like, okay, now imagine there's crows everywhere.
Right.
Yeah. So that scene, holy crap. And I love when Stevie approaches them, Patrick and David.
Right.
And she's like, why are you guys so glassy-eyed? Just like, what is happening with you two? And he's like, what? Oh, my God. I don't know how they thought this is a great idea. But
for Patrick, he just needed it to function.
Sure.
He's in pain.
Sure.
David just, you know, took it because he didn't want to sit through a dense first third of the exposition.
Oh, man. I'm so grateful for that scene.
Oh, man.
So grateful.
It's very good.
Yes,
very
it is.
Very funny.
Yes, it is. Everybody yeah. in that scene is funny.
Mm-hmm. So then they're back at the motel afterwards, and they're all just sort of plopped on the bed. Alexis is, like, chewing her hair.
I saw that.
Hair. Remember my theory from the first episode?
Oh, yes.
Just saying. Johnny's sitting there like, ugh. You know, like, Moira's, like, her hair's a little bit, like, more, like, flattened now, and the headdress is off. And Moira even says, she's like, the truly bummer thing now is, like, you know, we were going to have a big screen viewing of the thing, which we couldn't even do now.
Yeah.
Like, so, and then Alexis is like, yeah, but they're all going to be watching it at home. So, like, we'll have more views. So that's a good thing. You know, like, she's trying to, like, see the silver lining in all of this.
Yeah. And she's even saying, she's like, it wasn't that bad.
It's not the end of the world.
Right.
Until David walks in.
Okay. Have you seen this yet? Some random news station just posted video of the premiere. It's been shared 32,000 times.
Well, all press is good press, right?
You might want to watch it first.
Tonight, a murder of wild crows attacked would-be audience members who had come to see a movie about a crow attack. We must warn you, the following content is pretty graphic.
Okay, they weren't wild crows. They were supposed to be trained.
Trained? Some of them were painted seagulls. This is not good, Alexis!
It sort of looks like people are running away from your movie, Moira.
You, look what you have done!
Look what I've done! This was your idea, and now I have to pay Ronnie for damage to her carpet.
What were the crows even doing there in the first place?
It's called an immersive experience, David.
Immersed in lawsuits, maybe.
Oh, my gosh. Is a bunch of crows called a murder?
Yes.
Okay.
A murder of crows.
That's interesting.
I think it's on purpose. Like, I think because crows have, like, a sinister, you know, they have, like, a sinister connotation. It was some genius's idea to call a group of them a murder.
Okay.
There's another funny one. It might have even come up on this podcast before, but I think a group of apes or gorillas is called a shrewdness.
A shrewdness?
Uh-huh.
Wow.
Yeah.
I've never heard of that before.
I love that
a
piece of trivia. It's, like, so funny to me.
How would you even say that in a sentence?
A shrewdness of apes. Okay,
well, how else would you say that in a sentence other than that?
Same way you'd say a murder of crows.
When I was out and about in the fucking jungle or whatever, walking, there was a shrewdness of apes. Or that shrewdness of apes threw a pineapple on my fucking head.
A bunch of them all through one pineapple at your head?
I don't fucking know. That's what I'm saying.
As a group, they just decided.
They collectively decided for the one representative of the shrewdness.
There you go.
To throw the pineapple at
my
head.
There you go. That works. Now I'm following.
Okay, good. And now I also know how to use it in a sentence.
But yeah, so the ending of this episode made me feel the way the end of Cabaret made me feel.
Yep.
Where we're on such a high, it's a red carpet, it's a premiere, we're excited, everything's going great, and then it ends with, like, Moira shrieking at Alexis to make it stop.
I didn't expect it. I didn't expect this at all.
It was a weird, not, I shouldn't say weird, but it was, like, a definitely distinct choice to end the episode on that note. You know?
It makes me kind of believe that these things are happening because Moira needs to realize that this isn't what she should be doing anymore or wants to do.
Interesting.
Because little by little, there's a little bit of joy, like, being taken from each moment.
That's a very,
you know?
Another classic Dow. Here we go.
Well, thanks. But I don't know. That's kind of, like, hitting me. And I don't think it's a mistake or coincidence or whatever that Jocelyn all of a sudden, like, you know, we talked about earlier, is getting worked into this scenario. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. But it still makes me sad for Moira because We just want Moira to be fucking amazing and awesome and the star that she is. But yeah. Maybe this just is not what she's meant to do anymore. But also, I feel like this is becoming about where she's finding her joy.
Yeah, that's
true. And what part of this is she finding her joy?
That's true.
You know, there was a lot more joy that we saw her having when she was doing cabaret.
Yeah.
And that was behind the scenes.
Yeah. No, that's, you
know,
a good point.
So I don't know. I just...
The whole machine of it all, I think, is becoming draining on her.
Yeah.
It'll be interesting to explore that for the rest of the season. Yeah. Like, where we go from here. Because now the movie's out. She had her moment. Like, where do we go from here?
Yeah.
Like, is she going to continue to look into the crow's success? Will she start to turn her eye to the next project? Like, mm-hmm. You know, who knows? Because it feels like we've sort of closed the chapter on crows for now.
I think so. I think that it's been leading up to this.
Yeah.
And, you know, we knew that there was going to be something happening.
Right.
She can't release a movie without something big happening. And right. Also because Alexis's story needs to be told as well. And she's a major part of this too. So that's done. And I think, I'm assuming that this is going to be the pin in the crows.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, I don't know. I'm very interested to see what she's going to do moving forward.
Me too.
But again, something's pulling me in the direction of her and Dawson teaming up. I think that's what this season is all about, is them finding their place with one another and not just the family.
Yeah.
But with their friends, you know?
Something to think about.
Something to think about.
I like it.
Mm-hmm.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24/7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
This is Amy Poehler. My new movie, Disney and Pixar's Inside Out 2, is coming to theaters June 14th. And it's making me feel joy. Woo! And sadness. Oh. And anger. Definitely some disgust.
Rose.
And I think a little fear.
Really?
But I'm also feeling these new emotions like anxiety, embarrassment, envy, and ennui.
It's what you call the boredom.
Okay, that one was weird. It's going to be the feel-everything movie of the summer. Disney and Pixar's Inside Out 2, only in theaters June 14th. Get tickets now.
All right, let's talk about Johnny and Stevie.
Let's.
So as we talked about earlier, Stevie is looking forward to Johnny coming over to have like a little meeting with her and at her place. He comes over. He's very sweet. He brought some food as like a housewarming gift because he's never been there before. And then immediately sticks his foot in his mouth about how she hasn't cleaned up, but she has.
Yeah.
And then like starts to sit on her bed and realize it's her bed. And like, you know, it's just all the comedy of Eugene's physicality and like awkwardness coming to the forefront here. And so he sits her down. And the minute he started talking, I was like, oh, I see where this is going.
Yeah, me too.
Me too. Immediately I was like, oh my God, of course this is why he's here. Mm-hmm. Like the writing became so clear on the wall.
I felt it when she was in the car telling them. She spoke the words saying, I think he's going to ask me to come back. I'm like, no, he's not.
I didn't feel it then. I didn't feel it until on the precipice.
I did, because now that he's with Roland, and I do genuinely believe that he wants the best for Stevie. And
absolutely.
He's like, he meant it when he said, like, if that's what you feel like you need to do, go do that. And he's not trying to get in the way of that.
Right.
So I think that being said, that is why when she said that she was supposed to meet him, I'm like, no, this is not to ask her to come back.
Mm.
I was not surprised when he spoke those words, asking to buy her out.
It goes without saying that you've been an invaluable part of the team.
You don't have to sell me on the team, Mr. Rose.
And when I was your age, I had a million and one ideas and things I wanted to explore. And I know it takes time to find the right fit, which is why I have a proposal.
Oh, okay.
I want to buy you out.
Oh.
Yeah, I know the motel has been a weight on your shoulders, and I can offer you installment payments to give up your status as owner, and that would give you some financial stability while you take the time and figure things out.
I thought you were going to try and talk me into coming back.
Oh, no, no, that wouldn't be fair. Wouldn't be fair to you. I'm not going to stand in the way of you finding what makes you happy. And speaking of, I wanted to give you this.
I don't know what to say.
Well, once you get past the haircut and the dated references, I'm sure you might find something useful in there to help you get your footing. You don't have to downplay your excitement on my account, Stevie. I'll be just fine.
Ugh. That inscription in the book.
Yeah, I know.
His genuine, like, happiness on his face, you know, as he's like, I think in his mind, it's like, how can she say no to this? This is an amazing thing. Like, I'm offering her money. She gets to follow her dreams. Everything that she told me she wanted comes to this table, like, genuinely excited and happy. And I will say that the biggest plus in Stevie's column in this whole scene is that she comes out and tells him, I thought you were going to ask me back.
Mm-hmm.
That is huge.
She didn't fake anything. She didn't act like, oh, yeah.
She doesn't downplay it at all. No. He's like, don't downplay your excitement. What she didn't downplay was the truth of her emotions here,
sure,
which is that she thought this was going to go differently.
Mm-hmm.
And I really like that about her part of that interaction.
Yeah. This is the scene where she redeems herself, mm-hmm, for sure.
Yeah.
For sure. Moving forward.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You know, you're right. You're absolutely right. I think that in Johnny's mind, they're all in a good place right now. Johnny is very excited because, you know, he has his partnership now with Roland. They've just purchased another motel. He's excited about the future for himself, for this business that he's trying to get together. But he also, as far as he knows, Stevie's in a good place because she's getting to figure out what she wants to do. He doesn't know that she's struggling.
Right.
He doesn't know anything else other than what she's told him. And I don't know, seeing that book and hearing, you know, that he wants to buy her out and stuff, it made me a little sad because I didn't know. I didn't expect for her to come to him afterwards. I thought she was just going to accept that.
Oh, interesting.
And continue on. So it made me a little sad, and especially, like you said, you know, seeing that he's okay with everything, uh-huh, and knowing that she's not.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, this
kind
of sucks. Like, I was kind of bummed.
That would be a bummer way to end it.
Right, yeah. Right. But yeah, I mean, the fucking book.
Oh, my God.
The book.
The minute she started to unwrap it, because you don't see the front cover until, like, they cut to, like, the overhead shot. And so she starts to unwrap it, and I'm like, oh, my God, this is going to be the reveal of all reveals that he's written a book.
Yeah.
Like a self-help, how to be a success book.
Back in the 80s?
And that's the best part, that it's from the fucking Rose video days. Like,
oh,
and it's like,
God,
him with his fro and, like, oh, my God.
It's called Business the Johnny Rose Way.
What?
Oh, it's so good. And he's, like, leaning on this, like, giant VHS.
And it says fast forward to success, right?
Yes. So good. And this is the Eugene that we know from the 80s, yes, with the hair. Oh, my gosh. It's great. It really is.
Good. It's very good.
Good for them.
Yeah.
For, like, including little things like this.
That's an amazing prop. Like, whoever got to, oh, yeah. And Emily said she got to keep it.
Yeah,
she
kept I saw it, that. Yeah. I saw that. You know, and we may not get the flashbacks that we so
desperately want.
Yeah. But we get little things like this. And
absolutely.
It, you know, it fills that need.
Yes. It's very saffonsifying.
Yes.
To borrow Moira's turn of phrase. But yeah, that inscription, wishing you happiness in your bright future, like, just what a gem.
It is. I think also that whatever he wrote in that book, mm-hmm, to her was also, like, the wake-up call for her.
Mm-hmm. To not let it slip away,
yeah,
if that's what she wants.
Because she sees how much he cares and how much he's doing, too. That's hard to ignore. I mean, you can't deny that this man is a businessman, and he's trying, and he means it. And he's putting his money where his mouth is.
Right.
And he's doing all the things that need to be done. He's getting shit done.
Yeah. He's putting everything he has into this.
Right. The one thing he promised her from the beginning. was that he was always going to be a part. He was always going to try his hardest. He was always going to be there for her. And that has not changed at all, even it with her wanting to leave.
And he said to her that he would never leave her hanging.
Right. And he's offering to even take care of her now.
That's what I'm saying. That's he realizes that the best way that he can not leave her hanging here is to buy her out of the business.
Right.
Give her a monthly, you know, payment, essentially, to get her, like, going while she's trying to figure herself out. And eventually to have full ownership in the business, of the business. He's doing the thing.
Yeah.
I will say this, too, about Stevie and Emily's performance of Stevie. Like, when she goes back to the motel later, I noticed it immediately. I was like, see, this is it. She's not breathy. She's making eye contact. She's saying what she means and she means what she says. That's the difference.
Yeah.
I think and it made it clear to me the problems I was having with the earlier episodes with Stevie versus this Stevie now.
Huh.
I'm like, yeah, she comes out and she tells him, you know, I want back in. It's not like, Mr. Rose, no, it's just, this is what I want.
Yeah.
And then he sticks his hand out and she takes it.
Oh.
And they shake. And it's everything.
I thought he was going to cry.
I know. He looks so
the
kitty.
The smile. Like, this is the best news that he's heard in a long time.
It's like a proud father.
It really is. He wants to be in this partnership with her. He really, really does. I don't think he feels like he needs to be. I don't think – it's like a no strings attached kind of a thing.
Yeah.
Like, we don't need to be in business together. If you want to go, go. But I want to be in business with you. I want to be your partner.
Yeah.
Even in that inscription, what he writes in the book, it says your partner.
I know.
It still says that.
I know.
Yeah. It's – I like it. I really do. And I'm going to say this right now. Johnny Rose is a stand-up human being. Oh, my God.
He, I think – is maybe the heart of the show.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like, you know, like brings the heart to the show. He's so like perfectly the emotional counterpart
when
he needs to be to everybody.
Yep.
He's just perfect.
Yeah.
He's such a good person.
Yeah, that scene where she comes back and when he just like the biggest smile on his face. And I'm like looking at him because I know I started getting teary eyed.
Same.
And I'm like, is he going to get teary eyed? And he sticks out his hand. And, you know, she's always very reluctant in those situations. Like the hugs and
she's not much of a handshakes. Toucher.
Yeah. But she even smiles when she does it like, okay.
Yeah.
Man, this is meant to be with
partners.
These two. Yeah. It's really, really meant to be. And you and I thought this was going to go way differently from the beginning.
Oh,
we thought
no,
she was going to go out there and leave.
I could not have predicted. I couldn't have predicted this.
Me either.
But I'm really glad. You know, I will say now that we're here, now that we've sort of come a little bit full circle maybe on Stevie, at least for this first half of the season, this was good. This was a necessary thing. And I understand it now. Had I have seen the first five episodes before we ever started talking about them, I would have known this was coming and I could have maybe like spoken more
but
fairly
that's what's
and
good
truly
about, this.
About that. That's true. You're right. Because it allows us to be in the moment with every episode. But the thing is, again, as we said to begin with, the show fucking knows what it's doing.
Exactly.
I always have faith in the show.
The show is very good at making you feel your feels and all the emotions to get to a place.
Right.
And it's brilliant.
Yeah.
I mean, we needed to feel this way about her so we could feel this way about her.
That's
you know
right.
what I mean? Like,
absolutely.
That's what we needed.
Absolutely true. And it works.
We needed to be pissed to appreciate her.
Right. And in that way, it's earned.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Because in fact, if the season had started with Johnny saying he wants to buy a second motel and Stevie being like, let's do it, then there's nothing for Stevie to do.
Yeah.
Stevie is just along for the ride. She's sort of kind of been the whole time.
Yeah.
But you need this for Stevie. You need Stevie to have her own come to Jesus moment, to have her own like realization that this is what she wants and not just something that she's fallen into because this is what she's always done.
Yeah.
You know? And it works and it's earned and it's great, actually. So props
I
to
love
the show
it.
Once again.
I love it.
Yeah.
I couldn't have been more pleased.
Indeed.
With the outcome.
Any stray observations?
Oh, yes. And it's not a big deal, but it's something that I didn't like.
Okay.
A little moment that I was like, Wish she hadn't have said that. When Stevie is driving David and Patrick to the dentist, David makes the comment. He says, what better job is there than owning your own business? That to me, I didn't like. The way it was presented, the way he said it, it was very narrow-minded of him. Hmm. And I didn't like that. I feel like that takes away from so many other things that people do and like things that are done. I know it was coming from a place because he owns his own business and is very proud of that. But I don't know. Something just didn't sit right with me when he said that. And I'm like,
yeah.
Wish he didn't say that.
That's, again, astute observation. Like, I don't think that line didn't like hit me any kind of way. I just sort of took it at face value.
It didn't bother me to a point where I'm like, oh my God, I'm insulted. Nothing like that. Right. It's just kind of like,
Yeah. And it's funny, like, so as somebody who doesn't own her own business and has always worked for the man, you know, in my entire career, I was not offended by that. In fact, I think there's something sort of a little bit like aspirational about that, you know, and maybe even more so where he's coming from, other than the fact that he too is his own, you know, owns his own business. Like, I think the idea behind it, and because he phrases it too, he says, what's better than being your own boss? And I think that there is something to that idea. I think that people want to feel like they have a sense of ownership over what they do, feeling like you have a sense of autonomy is something that I think a lot of people strive for.
I don't know.
But that's just me, you know, devil's avocadoing you. Like, I'm not disagreeing with you.
Right. No, I don't know. I don't want to dwell on it. But yeah. I don't know. Right. When I heard that, it was one of those things, and I haven't felt that way in a long time about anything that any of these people have said, any of these characters have said, but that just hit me wrong.
No.
And
That's fair. Let's get into our first segment.
Who wore what best?
Whoop, whoop.
So understand this.
Okay.
This was, again, shocking no one, very hard for me.
Me too.
In this episode. But I think the reason I'm settling on this particular person's outfit is because I was surprised. For the premiere, I expected David to be dressed much more elegant, you know, tuxedo, something. I did not expect him to be dressed in leather pants and a sequined sweater. I did not expect that at all. But I think for that reason, I'm going to give it to him because also David in leather pants?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm going to give it to David and his leather pants and his sequined sweater.
I don't know.
Yeah. You know, like I said, fuck, this episode was really difficult.
Very difficult.
And that's becoming the theme more and more.
I know. With God each damn episode. It. So I have a bunch of honorable mentions to give.
Oh, gosh.
I name. And we sort of already touched on most of them.
No, I know. Yeah.
But like, Ronnie at the premiere, Jocelyn at the premiere, Stevie at the premiere, Moira, obviously, at the premiere. But my who wore what best goes to Alexis in the opening scene.
I fucking knew you were going to pick that one.
I mean, yeah, you know me.
The moment I saw it on screen, I knew you were going to pick that one. How funny.
It was just like, I was distracted. Like, the first few seconds of the episode, I was like, I wasn't even paying attention. I was like, I'm going to have to rewatch just this part just so I can hear what the fuck she's saying, because I couldn't stop staring at this outfit. It's not even a dress. It's like a two-piece.
Right.
But it's amazing. Like, the gold, silver, rose gold chevron, deep V, two-piece. The jewelry's on point. The hair is pinned back in a very similar style to the way that I always wear my hair, with the bobby pins all cute. She just looks like a golden goddess.
Yeah, she does.
And it's such a, like, you know, it's quite the look for just a day at the motel putting together a presentation for Moira. Mm-hmm. It seems like this is like a going out look. You know, she could have worn it.
Well, in our lives, it would be.
That's true. she could have worn that to the red carpet, sure. You know, although her red carpet dress was also amazing.
Yeah. Which I almost picked.
Yeah. But yeah, so that one, man, it really just was like, whew.
Do you notice how this season they've been choosing a lot of pieces that are really making her look so tall, taller than she already is? They're really accentuating, like, her torso and her legs are just looking very
interesting. I feel like I've always known about, especially her legs.
I don't know. Well, yeah. But I just feel like ever since, even with the first episode of this season, when they went to go look at the venue and stuff, those pants like really made her legs look super long.
That's true.
The last episode with the red dress that I chose, I mean, come on.
Yeah.
But she kills it.
I know.
She kills it.
She honestly does all the time.
But that is a good outfit.
Oh, man.
Good choice.
I'm obsessed with it. And the necklaces and the bracelets. Just all of it. All of it is just amazing. If I had that body, that is completely an outfit I'd wear. That is so something I would wear. I love it.
Me too. So let's get into our last segment.
Yes. Before we do our ratings, should we hear from the folks?
Let's. We had quite a few people actually reach out to us.
I know.
I love. I'm not.
Love it.
Not mad at that.
As I've said, I love, like, this is becoming my favorite part now. Yeah. It's like hearing all the thoughts.
All right. We have one listener. Loved it. It had everything. Funny, touching, David and Patrick, and crows. we had another person. Oh, my God.
That was perfect. My reaction to you. Remember when we were texting?
Oh, yeah. Goodness. Yeah, that was great. Oh, my God. I loved the Johnny and Stevie story, but thought the whole episode was so strong. So many laughs with all the feels. And that's from Bernadette.
Bernadette. Thank you. Totally agree.
Yes. I think it's going to cause friction that Patrick wants kids.
Ooh.
But I know it'll work out in the end. I thought this was the best episode of the season thus far, followed closely by the incident. While this isn't specifically about this episode, it's about the season generally. I think it's a conspicuous omission that there's been no talk about where David and Patrick are going to live after they get married. I understand why David is still living in the motel. It's pretty central to the whole premise of the show that the four roses live under one roof in the motel. But still, they're engaged now, and it would seem to me that certainly once they're married, they need to live somewhere that's not the motel and not Patrick's tiny studio apartment. It seems odd that we're now nearly halfway through the season, crying face, and presumably pretty close to the wedding, and there's been no acknowledgement of their having to live someplace else.
Hmm.
That's interesting to me.
I had not thought about that, so that's interesting. But I don't think that there's anything stopping them from addressing that further down the line. I mean, it only took them one episode to deal with Patrick moving out in the first place. So, like, Ray just needs to find them a place to live and that'll be fine. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, I don't know that it's, like, needs to be a whole conversation that spans episodes necessarily.
Yeah.
Although, did you see the promo for the next episode that aired right after?
Yeah.
Something the about promo. A table?
Yes.
Oh. So maybe they're talking about decorating a house or
maybe.
Something.
Maybe.
You know what I mean?
Is Jake from State Farm really coming back?
I honestly, let's not talk about it now. Oh, we can't go down that rabbit hole.
No, please.
So, yeah, I mean, I don't know. I hadn't thought about it, but
yeah.
It's not to say that they won't address it. I don't know. We'll see.
It'll be interesting if they do. I mean,
sure.
Now I want to know.
Yeah. Now that you've brought it up.
Yeah. Also, why did I just sound like Arnold Schwarzenegger? Now. What the fuck? What am I doing? Anyways.
You are funny.
Thanks.
Okay. So let's get into ratings. Ratings. I'm going to give this episode 5 out of 5 parkas by 7.
That's good.
Yeah, this is for me like the clear first 5 of the season. It's kind of a perfect episode. Nothing fell flat. Nothing felt like meh or whatever. It was just great from beginning to end. So
it was. So I'm going to give this episode a 5 out of 5 Merlot carpets for no other reason other than a high David. No, that's not true. This was just a perfect episode. I laughed from beginning to end. Good news came our way about Stevie and Johnny. And Alexis being a boss-ass bitch.
Yeah.
Like, come on. Mm-hmm. It was a good one. It was a really, really good one. One of the funniest in a while.
Yeah.
So 5 out of 5 Merlot carpets.
Yay.
Yes.
That's going to do it for us.
Yes, it is.
Thank you, as always, for tuning in. Don't forget to rate, subscribe, and review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. You can find us on social media at Upschitt's Creek Pod on Instagram and Facebook, or at Upschitt's Creek on Twitter. You can also subscribe to our Patreon at patreon.com/Upschitt's Creek, or send us an email at upschittscreekpod@gmail.com. And until next time,
we love you, shitheads. Kiel Vage.
Blessings. This episode is brought to you by the generous donations of Emily and Lucina.
Well, hello, you.